All right, we're going to be looking at the finishing up the parable of the rich fool, and then we'll be beginning the parable of the unjust steward. And they both have to do with covetousness and how covetousness can impact our stewardship to God. Because we only have so much time, we only have so much energy, we only have so much money. If we focus it on the here and the now, what happens to the future? We're going to be in trouble, right? Because we didn't put our priorities. So when we normally think about covetousness, we kind of move to the 10th commandment. And what's the 10th commandment say? Okay, you shall not covet what? All right, the possessions of your neighbor, right? In other words, we often think of covetousness as looking at what other people have and wishing that we could have it. But this is a more subtle form of covetousness. This is the covetousness that leads us to pampering ourselves just a little too much or giving ourselves a little too much. And where's that line? Especially in our culture, where's the line between upward mobility, between planned obsolescence? In other words, we buy something this year, and in 5 years, what do we have to do again? We have to replace it. At what point is that wrong? And I think Jesus is going to hit this to us with two specific parables. And we covered the first one last week, so I didn't want to spend too much time. I kind of cut it down. I had 4 pages last week. This week we only have 2 pages, and they're pretty condensed. So I wanted to start with Jesus' statement at the very top of page 1, which is, take heed and beware of every kind of covetousness, or all kinds of covetousness, because life doesn't consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Now, what is the phrase keeping up with the Joneses? What does that really reveal to us or express to us? Remember that a long time ago? Virgil?
It's a competitiveness within us to have the same thing or better than our neighbor does.
Okay, exactly. Now, at what point is that ambition, and when does it change to covetousness?
What comes in, I guess.
Or like this guy here. He had barns. He had everything. What does he want to do? Tear them down and build bigger ones. And so I think that's where we need to be looking, is where is our financial priorities going. And one of the ways, of course, you can do that is Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So, but anyway, let's look at a couple of these passages, and we'll kind of lay out our groundwork here. Now, we're told in 1 Timothy 6 that godliness with what is great gain?
Contentment.
Having food and clothing, we shall be therewith content. What does contentment mean?
Satisfied.
What?
Satisfied with what you have.
Okay. Comfortable with what you have. Don't need anything else. If somebody gave me $100,000, I don't need anything else. So where's my mind start to go?
Helping others.
You know? Helping others. Exactly. And that's what Paul said. Let him who stole steal no more, but what? Labor with his hands to give to him who has need. All right, so the priority shift, and we see that in the first century. When there was needs, we're told in chapter 2, chapter 4, that not one of those disciples looked at anything he had as what? Belonging exclusively to him. But they had all things common. They were selling lands, they were selling possessions. Their priorities were outward. And of course, that's what agape love does, right? Agape love shifts from my circle of concern to everyone else's circle of concern. And so it's no longer what I want, what I need, what I have. It becomes a little more responsible regarding some things that are talked about here. For example, in 2 Peter 3, it says, since these things are going to be dissolved, where should our priorities be? See, laying up treasures in heaven. We know this world is going to be gone. We know we're going to be leaving this world. We brought nothing in. Can't take anything else. So everything we hang on to here, what happens when we die?
It stays here.
It stays here. We lose it forever. But everything that we've given on the first day of the week or anything we've done to help other people or to use our money for things the Lord is asking us to do, where's that money go? And that's going to be the real purpose of this parable we're going to look at tonight, which is that you need to use your unrighteous mammon so that when it or you fail, there will be people who will what? Welcome you into eternal tabernacles. So, and the next one, do not lay up treasures on the earth. And again, we talked last week about how hard that is for people in America. We do have Social Security. We do have a 401k or a 403b or some other form. And so, do we have treasures laid up on earth whether we like it or not? Yeah. Is that wrong? No. And is it wrong to be rich? No. But there's certain, with whom much is given, much is required. All right. So, let's see. Where do we want to go? Let's look at that verse right in the middle of the page. What chokes the word more quickly than anything else? Cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches. So that's what this parable is all about. Now, you remember the circumstances. Why did he start giving this parable? What was the interruption? He was talking to his disciples about important matters, and then here comes this guy, and what does he want?
Divide the inheritance.
Okay, divide the inheritance, right? And so the Lord uses this parable. And we talked last week about these three scenarios in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I'll let you look at them. They're at the bottom of page one. But the first one is a guy who works 24/7. He has no family. He has no one to leave the money to, and he never uses it for himself. What's the point of that? Then we have the second guy who reaches everything, and then just as he's about to use it, he dies. And then the third guy is the guy who reaches it in his 30s and 40s, and he doesn't do anything with it, and then he loses it all. Now, any one of those scenarios, door number one, door number two, door number three, which one do you want? See, we don't want that. But Jesus is going to deal with this number two. He's going to deal with the guy who's got everything all set the way he wants it, but he's never going to live to get it. And so all of his work in his 20s, in his 30s, in his 40s, up to his 60s, and he dies before he gets the chance to use it, what happens to all that labor? It's wasted. You brought nothing in. If you don't use it for the Lord, then what do you get for your life? Nothing. And that's Jesus' point when he says, if a man gains the whole world, but he can't hold on to his own soul, what does it profit? All right, so let's go ahead and turn to the next page here. So the top of the page here, command those who are rich in this present age. Number one, don't be arrogant. Wealth tends to make people think they're better than other people. So don't be arrogant. That's what we were talking about earlier. We're keeping up with the Joneses. There's just a certain standard of self-esteem that comes by being on the top. But the reality is that it shouldn't be that way, nor trust in uncertain riches. Even if you have millions of dollars, if you get a health problem or something comes along, who should you be trusting in, your wealth or God? See, God. What's that?
Yeah.
Job had everything, but he didn't care. See, that was the key. He enjoyed it. And when Satan said, if you take it from him, he'll curse you to your face because that's all he wants. Well, was that true? No, that wasn't true at all. And so he's a classic example here. All right. Now, in the next verse there, which is about three pages from the top, it says, God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? And what's the answer to that? Nobody really knows, right? You just don't know. you try to leave it to your kids, you try to leave it to the church, you try to leave it to people who will be responsible with it. You always get that? Does that always work out? No, we all remember what happened with Carl. You know, Carl thought he had a nice will all laid out, and when it all ended up, did it go exactly where he wanted it to go? See, it didn't. And so is he who lays up treasure for himself is not rich toward God. All right, and then he makes some applications, which I'm not going to take a lot of time on because we've dealt with this a lot of times in the Sermon on the Mount. But in Luke chapter 12, he does almost the same thing. He talks about worrying about your life because a lot of people want to be rich so that they don't have to worry about tomorrow. And how does that work out? See, wealth can't help you. Who's the only person who can help you with tomorrow? Well, it's God. And that's going to be the point of the second parable. Use your money so that you can please God. That money, which is yours, you have the opportunity to use it to invest in the future. And we're not talking about 403Bs or 501Ks or retirement. We're talking about when this life ends and Jesus is going to say there's power and wealth so they'll receive you into eternal tabernacles. In other words, you can prepare with money. You can use money to prepare for eternity. And that's what the Lord's going to be dealing with in this next parable. So I think we'll stop there, except just to say this. We need to look at where our anxieties are. Yeah, I read an article a few months ago now. It said, if you could have anything you wanted, anything, what would it be? Now, would you say, my sin's forgiven and being right with God? That was my final thought. I thought, that's all I want. I don't really need anything else. I just want God to see me as a faithful servant. And as long as we've got that, what else do we need? See, everything else the Lord says, if you seek first God's kingdom and God's righteousness, then what else will happen? All these other things? You'll have them. And so, it's like when Martha was, not this Martha, the Martha in the Bible, she wanted Mary to leave Jesus' teaching to come to help her serve with physical things. And what does Jesus say? Mary? Did Mary choose the wrong course? No, she picked the right course. Spiritual growth and development is more important. And Jesus would rather have us wanting to study with him than wanting to take care of his physical needs. And that's really the upshot of what is being taught there. So, all right, so let's go ahead and stop there. Let's go ahead and pick up on page 3 now. This is the only parable I've ever taught on that I got called to the carpet and told I was teaching error. And I had a big debate. It wasn't the elders and it wasn't the congregation. It was just one guy in there. And so I've always been very cautious, I guess I'll use the word, with this parable. Because there's a lot, and it's incredible. If you sit down and look at all the commentaries, it is just incredible how this parable has been interpreted. And some of the ridiculous things that are being taught there. So I wanted to take some time in the introduction and in the applications to talk about context. Because is the parable alone, or is the parable set in a setting where we are hemmed in on how we should interpret it? See, and the latter is the case. So before we even talk about the parable, we want to talk about the boundary here and the boundary here and the boundaries there so that we won't leap over. And that's how I feel. And after studying, I studied for hours and hours. I went through every commentary that was written on the book and I kind of categorized them as to what they were teaching. And when I got done, I didn't change my thinking at all. And of course, this guy never did either. So. But anyway, let's look at the context. Let's look at that verse that's about 2 inches down. Actually, it's not a verse. It's a compendium of verses. All right. So we start in chapter 15, verse 1. All right. And in chapter 15, verse 1, then the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him to hear him. So that's his audience. Well, verse 2, the Pharisees and the scribes complain, so they're there too. And then, so he starts with three parables. The parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the prodigal son. You can see, I capitalized them here, that he spoke the parable to them, saying, and then in verse 8, or what woman? And then in verse 11, then he said, then in chapter 16, verse 1, and he said also to the disciples. So now we have the disciples there. So we got the tax collectors and the sinners, the scribes and the Pharisees, and the disciples, who are all now prepared to hear this particular parable. So, verse 16, 1, he also said unto his disciples, there was a certain man. Now verse 9, and I say unto you, and then verse 14, and the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things and scoffed at him. So then he said unto them. All right, so this parable is designed for the disciples. This is not a parable for the sinners and the publicans. It is not a parable for the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Now, they're listening, and they're going to make some applications, but who was this parable directed toward? He said to the disciples. He said unto them. So this is a parable that gives the context. Now, regarding the applications, we got that little box with, on the left side, are the conjunctions and prepositions that tie these together. So we have for, and, that when, therefore, and, for either, and, or else. Now, when you see those terms, you realize we can't just parcel this up. They all sit as a unit. And then look at how many times on the right side you have the word you. So, verse number 2 there, I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Now, what does a pronoun always go back to? The closest antecedent is in verse 1. He said to the disciples. So, to the disciples, I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Verse 3, or number 3, you or it fails, they may receive you into everlasting home. So who's the you? Well, the disciples. All right. Then number 5, if you have been faithful in unrighteous mammon, not been faithful in unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you the true riches? All right. Then number 7, no servant can serve number 6. If you have been faithful in what is another man's... Oh, I already did that one, sorry. So number 7, no servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal one and despise the other. And then who do we end up in number 9? The you again, all right? So are you in the you? Are you a disciple?
Yeah.
Does this apply to you? Yeah, this is for us. All right. So I don't care what the parable is actually teaching at this point. Because regardless of what the parable is teaching, the applications here are very clear. And Jesus makes them. I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, so that when you fail or the money fails, there's a little bit of a textual issue here. Doesn't really make that much difference. They may receive you into everlasting homes. And then he starts in, it's all about unrighteous mammon all the way through. And even in number 9, what are we still talking about? You can't serve God and mammon. So you have to use mammon. We can't get away. Can we get away from mammon? No, we can't get away from it. And the cares of the world and the desires for other things and the deceitfulness of mammon choke the word. So there's a safety valve here. And the parable gives us the safety valve. And so regardless of what the parable actually teaches, we already know where it's taking us. We already know what the applications are going to be. Now, I'm not going to get into that in much detail tonight because that's not my purpose. Next week, we're going to spend a lot of time on these 9 points because I think they're very, very important to some of the decisions we have to make as we live our lives. And especially in our culture, because there's very few people in this culture who aren't blessed with a lot of money. And it's interesting because if you are a Christian with a Christian's work ethic, is it hard not to excel and rise above all the people who are lazy and all the people who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing? And so most people become very successful just by being a Christian. It isn't that they're out to make money. It isn't that they're out. It's just that when they're in high school, they pick a job. They pick a job they like. They pick a job they're going to enjoy. You probably heard the expression, if you pick a job you'll like, you'll never work a day in your life. Does that sound about right? Yeah, if you love your work, then going to work is a pleasure. And most people in that situation, they just keep going up. Because they're Christians, they're devout, they're devoted, they work under their master as they do to the Lord, and so these things are going to occur. And is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong being successful, being wealthy, being, you know, enjoying the fruits of your labor? No, there's nothing wrong with that at all, except money is dangerous, and money is a vehicle to take us where we want to go. Now, can we use money as a vehicle to have the best of everything as we go through life? Can we use money as a vehicle to serve the Lord and put the Lord's kingdom first? And so that's basically what this parable is going to be like, or is going to be about. All right? So any questions so far? Okay, so now we'll get into the parable, and I'll see how many people here are saying this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So we'll see how that works out. All right, so let's look at those paragraphs at the bottom of page 3. Okay, so the first paragraph says this: these things are truth regardless of the interpretation and understanding of the parable itself. In other words, I already know what the parable is for, and I already understand exactly what I'm supposed to get from it. So regardless of the parable itself, that's where I, and regardless of how I interpret the parable, what has to be the end result of my interpretation of the parable? I got to get to these 9 things. All right? Now, the next paragraph says the main difficulty of the parable centers on the ungodly deeds of the main character. All right? The main character is a scoundrel. This is one of the worst pictures that you're going to find in the New Testament of someone who is ungodly and corrupt and evil. And, you know, I was thinking about it this afternoon. How many movies do we have today where the criminal is glorified? And we are amazed sometimes at how shrewd these criminals are. A lot of shows like that on. And do people like them? I mean, let's face it. You watch Criminal Minds, and I've never watched these shows, but I'm just saying, I was thinking about this afternoon. You watch Criminal Minds, you watch Law and Order, do you find people who are very ingenious about how they perform their criminal acts? You know, Jeannie's told me for years, and I agree with her, why do they show us how criminals think? Because what's the upshot of teaching someone how criminals think? They're going to do it. But is it fascinating? I mean, how many shows are there at night that you and I can't even watch because that's what they're dealing with? And then you have these shows, the old Western shows, where you got Billy the Kid, or you've got Bat Masterson, or you have all these different guys, and they're always doing something really smart, but in what way? They're breaking the law a lot of times, doing things that are wrong, and yet we do the same thing Jesus is doing here. So the point is not that we look at these things because we're glorifying the criminal. The point is that we're looking at these things because it's amazing how people shrewdly come up with things. And we've all seen these shows where it starts with a group of criminals. They're going to perform this. They're going to steal jewels, or they're going to Mission Impossible. You remember all the different things they were going to do. By the end of the show, you're just amazed at what they did. But half of what they did was not legal. It was not really proper. And so when we have this man and Jesus doing exactly the same thing, I see absolutely no problem here, because he is not glorifying the man for what he did. He is using the man and worldliness to help his people understand, or his disciples understand. So The next paragraph, the one just before the bottom, the second one before the bottom, some proclaim the accusation of wasting his goods was not due to him being wicked. It was only because he was inept and foolish. It wasn't, he was wasting his goods because he was just an ignorant, foolish man, and that's why he was fired. The problem with that is, what does Jesus say the master called him at the end? The master commended the unjust steward, right? And the Greek word unjust there, the Greek word for righteousness is dikaios. And this is adikaios because the alpha privative in Greek language, if you put an alpha in front of a word, is the same thing as if you put un in our language. If we go from profitable to unprofitable, what have we done? We've made an opposite, right? Profitable means you made money. What does unprofitable mean? You lost money. So righteous, unrighteous. One is righteous, the other is the opposite of righteous. Jesus calls this man an unrighteous steward. So he's wasting the goods as a scoundrel, as a criminal, not as a good man. So that we can't interpret it that way. The very bottom paragraph, all right? If we remove the problem of the unrighteousness of the steward, the commendation of the master, and the silence of Jesus, the parable itself is simple. A simple and clear account of what happens. It's just what happens in the world. So I don't see any problem interpreting the parable at face value. We have a criminal who's going to be dismissed, and who tries to figure out, how am I going to make it after I'm dismissed? He comes up with an elaborate plan, which in that day and age, we look at it today and I'm not that impressed with his plan. But at that day and age, Jesus says, what does the master say about this guy? He's shrewd. This is an amazing solution. Now, does that mean he didn't throw him into jail after he made that decision? Yeah, I think he probably still threw him in jail. I think that he probably got these people who cheated on him or cheated him. So that's kind of where we're at. All right, so let's start in. We're now at the top of page 4. So we have the parable. How many main characters are in this parable? Well, there's two. There's a master who's rich, and there's a steward. And what is a steward supposed to do? Okay, he's supposed to, he's kind of like, some of those of us who have stocks, we have somebody who manages that account. What are we hoping they're doing with that account? Taking our money, buying stocks, and putting that money in their pocket and saying we didn't make anything? Is that what we're hoping for? No, we're hoping for someone who puts our needs above their needs and tries to make us a lot of money. Now, have we ever had people who find out in the end that that's not what they did, that they lost everything? Yeah, that happens. And if you get somebody like that, what's your first thought? That guy needs to go to jail. That guy has cheated me. That guy, and that's exactly what's going on here. This man has been told by someone, this guy is not using your goods for your benefit. He's using them for his benefit. Now, I don't think that's hard to understand, and I don't think we need to make any analogies here or turn it into some kind of a figure or turn it into something. It's just a direct, obvious story that is leading to the applications that we need to make. Now, when the man is accused, does he offer a defense? I mean, let's face it. If I was this man's steward and I was trying my very best, but I just kept making mistakes, and he said, "You're wasting my goods," what would my answer be? I'm doing the best I can. I'm trying to be an honorable man here. And I wish you'd give me another chance because I haven't really done anything wrong. Does he do that? No, he's clearly an unjust steward. He is using the money. He's the classic man who acts like your friend to your face, but what is he really? He's a con man, right? He's someone who, he's like a lot of false teachers today. Jesus said they're wolves in sheep's clothing, and Paul says, don't let them cheat you. Don't let them make merchandise out of you, is how Peter puts it. These are people, as Paul said to the Galatians, they're trying to shut you out from the gospel so you will go after them. That's their goal. And that's exactly what Paul told the elders also. Men from among your own selves will arise to do what? Draw away the disciples after them. I want that. Church is a wonderful vehicle. How many people today are using the church as a vehicle to get rich? I mean, the church is a wonderful vehicle to get rich. And anyone who's a con man, I mean, being a preacher, that's the way to go, right? I mean, you can make a ton of money that way. Now, I'm just telling you the truth. Now, am I recommending that? No, it's just the way it is. I remember, I don't know if you ever watched Sanford and Son. I think I told you this story once. Sanford and Son, he had that boy named Lamont. Lamont decided, he came on a TV talk show. He had gold this and gold that. And he said, you know, I've left acting. I've become a preacher. I just looked at that guy and I just thought, wow. But you know, it's the truth. I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of preachers are there in the world today who are just making money? And they'll preach whatever you want to hear because they can make money. And so this prodigal, or excuse me, this unjust steward, it's going on everywhere. And so for us to say, well, it doesn't make sense. Why would Jesus talk about somebody like this? Well, because that's how it is. And the funny thing is, if you go and talk to the people who are following this preacher, and he's rich, are they upset about it? No, they like him to be driving that Cadillac around, or they like him to have that mansion, or they like him to have, what was it, Oral Roberts, who had the gold fixtures on his sinks and everything? I can't remember. He's the guy who said, Jesus appeared to me and said, I'm going to die unless you give me such and such an amount of money. You remember that? What was that, 30 years ago, 20 years ago? So it isn't just in the business realm. All right, so the heart of the parable is him giving his final accounting. Right, the guy says, you can't be steward anymore, I'm firing you. But before you go, I want to look at the books. I want you to present the books for me. Well, the guy's got a huge dilemma. Apparently he spent everything he's got. He doesn't have anything. So he says, well, I don't want to beg, and what else can't I do?
Can't do heavy labor.
Yeah, I don't want to work. No. I've never worked a day in my life. I'm not quite ready to go working now. And I can't beg. So he's pondering, what am I going to do? And like a lightning bolt, I mean, it's interesting because the tense of this word is very unusual. And it's kind of like, Eureka, I've found it. I've got the solution. So he comes up with a solution. And solution's right exactly in the middle of the page. And the solution is, he calls every one. Now, Jesus only picks two. There could have been 10, there could have been 50. And each one comes in, and he says, how much do you owe my master? One at a time, how much do you owe my master? Now, the first guy comes in, he says, 100 measures of oil. That's about 800 or 900 gallons of oil. Is that worth a little bit of money today? 800 or 900 gallons of an oil? Not crude oil, I'm talking about vegetable oil. Yeah, you go down to the store, and you're paying $4, $5 for a quart of that stuff. So it's worth a lot of money. Now, the second guy, he's got 1,000 bushels of grain. You know, I've never involved that. Anybody know what a bushel is? I didn't have time to look it up today. Anybody know? George, you know what a bushel is? You were involved with that kind of stuff, or were you? I don't know.
A bushel is 16 quarts, I think.
16 quarts, all right. So 1,000 times 16 quarts is what? 16,000 quarts. Is that a little bit of grain? So he comes in, all right, you cut it in half, you cut yours by 20%, you cut yours by 50%. He takes each one and he gets them to write it, which means if they won't help him legitimately, we got blackmail abilities now. Can we blackmail these people? So if you're going to be a scoundrel, set up the people so that if they won't help you voluntarily, look, I got the original note here, and I got the one that you signed that says you have this much. Now, you need to help me. Any TV shows dealing with blackmail on today?
American Greed. So on CNBC.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I never heard of that.
It's real life stories about people who are committing car arrests.
Okay, all right.
Things that people will do. Yeah.
Charles?
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah. I mean, you can look at the government, the way things are being run. You know, people in position.
Yeah.
What they're doing. You know, there are some people that will never do any time for anything because they already have it set up the way they want.
Right.
And this way it's going to continue on. The basic principle is right what you're talking about right now. This is how they got the idea of doing what they're doing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people who know how to use money and power to their advantage. Now, Christians, do we even think like that? I still remember the first time somebody cheated me. I was shocked because I thought everybody was like me. I mean, I'd give anybody's shirt off my back. I would never do anything to hurt anybody. And this poor guy couldn't get his check. I said, well, here, I'll give you the money, and when you get then I'll get your check. Well, I never got his check because he came and got that check too. So I learned a good lesson. There's not everybody thinks the way we do, and not everybody has the same mental thinking. Now, Jesus is the Word who's with God and was with God from the beginning. When it says every imagination of the thoughts of men's heart was only evil continually, could Jesus hear that stuff too? Yeah, remember, what is it, John chapter 3? He said he did not trust himself to man because he himself knew what? What was in man. You can't trust men. They will tell you to your face, I will serve you, I will love you, I will dedicate myself to you, and the next day, they're doing what Judas did. And so this situation, and like you guys are all saying, and it's true, it's all around us. People using money for their own ends. And the Lord is saying, I want you to do it too. But how are we doing it? We're not trying to cheat anybody. We're going to use it for God's benefit, not for our benefit. That's why Jesus says at the end of the parable, I'm saying to you, make use of unrighteous mammon. Do the same thing this guy did. This guy took that money so that when he was put out of his business, he would be taken care of. We're supposed to use our money so that when we're put out of our business, now when's that going to happen? When we die. When we die, we can use money here so that we will be received into everlasting tabernacles. Now again, next week we'll have to talk about that because that sounds funny. And that's what got me hung, by the way, was that statement right there. Well, there were two. There's another one which we'll talk about next week. But so, the critical point of the interpretation of the parable is given at the very bottom of the page there, where it says, his Lord commended the unrighteous steward because he had done wisely. Now, under normal circumstances, when someone cheats you, do you commend them? No, because you feel cheated. But this was such an amazing use of authority to take care of himself that, like I said, he commended him. But pride the next day threw him in jail. I mean, I don't think that commendation meant, oh, wow, this guy's so smart, I'm just going to let him go. I don't think he let him go. I mean, that runs counterintuitive to everything people think. However, is it in the parable? See, it's not in the parable, so we can't go there. It'd be nice to say, well, I know what happened next. Do I know what happened next? I haven't got a clue. Matter of fact, the Lord leaves that empty. It doesn't really matter because that's not his point in giving the parable. The whole point of the parable is, here's a guy who's in a bind. He's going to find himself with nothing, and he's going to use what he has so that when he has nothing, he's going to be taken care of. Now, that's the point of the parable. Are we all going to end up with nothing when we die? Brought nothing in? Can't take anything out. So who's going to take care of us after we die? And is there anything we can do with money so he'll take care of us better? Well, isn't that what Jesus said? Lay up treasures in heaven. All right, so that's going to be the basis. Next week we'll spend our class looking at the applications. And we'll come back and talk about this a little more. If there's anyone here, I've run out of time. I should have left you enough time to tell me how terrible that this view is. But you can think about it all week, and you can let me know next week that you don't agree with that. Because you may be. Like I say, there's a lot of different ways to teach this, and you may have heard it. You may get up next week and say, that's not the way I heard it.
You
because
got 2 weeks.
What's that?
2 weeks.
Oh, man, you got 2 weeks. You guys ought to be able to rip me to pieces in 2 weeks, right? All right. I don't see how else to interpret it, to be honest with you. I really don't. I think that you just have to take the Lord's words at face value. When he says, this is where I'm headed, then you have to accept that. Anyway, we'll talk about this next week, or 2 weeks, excuse me. And you sure? Oh, yeah, there's not 29 days in this month, is there? All right, yeah, okay. 28 days. Thanks, everybody.